Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, especially you, James. This is the home of the Band of Traders podcast and sometimes referred to as the Kyle and Purdue Show. I am your host, Kyle. Joining me for tonight's roundtable, we've got Vanta Trading's Mr. Banks, along with our commissions remittance executive, Flary.
Someone's got to pay Terry. Let's go. Might as well be me.
I'm going to love it. On the docket for tonight's discussion, we've got what makes a good low. And depending on how that goes, we may have another topic to squeeze in there. After that, we'll sum up our past week with the good, bad, ugly segment before wrapping up with some new bold predictions. Before we check in on last week's results, let's get all that self-promotion stuff out of the way first. Banks, you got any news to report over at Vanta? Vanta.
Nothing super new on our end. We still have the 50% off of the Prop Alpha for the first month, I believe is what it is. But other than that, it's pretty status quo, live every morning, just like always. And, we're going to start to pick up on the, on more of the weekly drops and stuff like that. So
I'm still
been talking to Baba about
I'm that. Waiting for Baba to give me a date so I can start promoting the AMA on prop firms. That's the one I'm waiting for.
Yeah. I think Flary needs to be involved.
Oh God. Yeah. Get all the tips and tricks for how to pass these fuckers.
Some game theory stuff. Man, exactly. There's some really good game theory about it. It's super weird. Like when you actually look at essentially they're selling you a call option, right? Mm-hmm. So like you're trading volatility in an odd way. And I just think so many people trade them incorrectly because they come in and they try to trade like a process and almost nobody has enough edge to beat them trading a standard process. You have to take the volatility. But anyways, there's some cool stats around that.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely need to set that up. Flary, what about you, man? You've been a little busy setting up a guest for us for next week. You want to tell us about what you got cooking?
Yeah. So there's a guy on Twitter, and I honestly don't know him all that well. I've just been following his content and just really, actually just from a place of like wishing to learn more about some of the things that he's talking about from a content mm-hmm. perspective. 2-year flipper. So, we're talking about, potentially having some other people on or whatever. And he was on Twitter kind of mentioning that he wants to share some of the stuff that he's doing. So I just reached out, sent him a DM and gave him an invite to, the Friday show. And he said he would be happy to come on. Couldn't make it this week, but will likely be next week as long as schedules align. He's kind of like me. He's got too many kids and they all have too many activities. So I think I think tonight didn't work. But guy basically scalps treasuries products. He trades shit coins. He's basically like my spirit animal of trading. It sounds like. But, so just excited to learn more from him. And, just some of the stuff that guy's got a bunch of experience, trading sort of like big size and in the big boy market. So, just always a cool opportunity.
I'll just go ahead and resign myself to the fact that that's probably going to be at least a 90-minute episode.
Listen, if the guy wants to talk, let him talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. See, for show news, we've got an interview with Dan Rawich that's going to be coming out next week. If you're interested in trading options, you want to check that one out. Banks and I are going to be recording the next episode of our Economics for Traders mini-series with Eric Mason. Not this coming week, but the week after that. So there's still plenty of time to send in any questions you got for us. You can send those over via Twitter at FinancialInept1, or you can join the Discord and just shoot us a DM. Just no feet pics, please.
Are they still coming in from that one time I
won? No. But it's still something I go back to when I need a boost to my self-esteem. At least I got good-looking feet.
I don't think your wife's ever going to forgive me.
No. Check out bandtotraderspodcast.com. You can browse the guest directory, check out all the deals and discounts, all the stuff we've collected over the years. Now that we got all that out of the way, let's check in with last week's predictions. And spoiler alert, somebody in this room here nailed it. It was not me.
I'm not a perma bear, but it was the structure was there, and they've been selling data. Like, they got back into that, sort of sell the news, whatever you want to call it. Like, they're using the data drops or the numbers as exit liquidity, and we saw it again. Mm-hmm. And the daily confirmed today. So,
yeah, yep. Well, I think your exact prediction was going to be that after they post the report Thursday, they were going to lose the trend. But I don't think they lost the trend till Friday, but I think it's close enough. We just give it to you.
They confirmed it. Yeah, we started the downtrend Thursday, Friday.
Yeah. Baba was the next closest. He was calling for PPI at 2.7. The core year over year actually came in at 2.8. I was trying to fade both of y'all, and that did not work at all. Bear, in the chat, he called 3.8. He was way off.
I mean, it is a bold prediction.
Let's see. I don't know what we're going to do for this week. Maybe we'll do something around FOMC. Maybe we'll do something around March Madness. I don't know. We'll see what kind of direction we want to take that. But I think for now, it's time to just kind of dive in on our topic today. So this one is kind of stems from something, Banks, that you just kind of casually mentioned on the Discord this morning during the trading session.
Yeah.
You said something about the low not being likely to be the low of the day because ES and some of the other markets made lows at the same time. And you said something about the statistics showing that those don't tend to get respected. So I kind of just want to open this up to just more of a general discussion about like what makes a good low or high. It doesn't have to necessarily be a low.
Yeah, forget that bullish stuff.
I mean, it in all honesty, it's kind of a tough question because it all depends on what you look at. You know, with what we're looking at in the market today, the overall trend was down. All three products were kind of trading the exact same way, all came into kind of a, I mean, to me, it wasn't really a key spot for that first low that we had. And we all kind of made that low at the same time, which usually if it's going to be a strong low, usually you have a little bit of, you know, I would say NQ or ES is probably making a low and the other one is not quite making it. And you have that, you know, that divergence in the charts. Not always is going to be the case, but I would say more than likely that stronger low occurs during that time. But it just, to me, that low seemed unfinished. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like it really kind of came from nowhere in the sense of like where we should bounce. And I just had a lot more key spots below us to get tested. And, you know, so that push up was kind of a, you know, it went a little farther than I kind of anticipated, but it was definitely, you know, a pop to short to go target those lows.
What are some of the other things that you look at then? I mean, because that's just kind of like one of the components there that you mentioned. Like, what are some other things that stick out to you or that you look for?
Yeah, I mean, I in all honesty, I think it matters how you come into the low, to be honest with you. You know, if you have one of those where it's some big ass wick that you come down and hit a key spot and you get, you know, delta in, delta out and kind of fire out of there, you know, it's a tell sign when you have, you know, buyers stepping up in the right area. But when you kind of falter into or grind into a spot, I'm not such a big fan of that. I kind of want to see buyers kind of initiate and kind of, you know, set up in that area, kind of that order flow kind of, you know, trade. But that first low was, at least today on Friday, was, you know, to me was kind of premature. I don't know a way to say that, but it was premature in the way that we did it. And we kind of went back to a key spot on, you know, on the way down, and we reoffered and just went and targeted again. And kind of the way that we're looking at stuff now, it's like, the ranges that we're looking at are so key. And, you know, to me, I didn't really have a key spot in that area. And, yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on how you come into Lowe's, mm-hmm. you know, how aggressive sellers are in, if you're hanging them out to dry at the, you know, at the lows, or, you know, buyers at the highs. And then just the really, you know, the initiation off of that is key for me.
Flair, you want to take a minute to kind of give your thoughts on that before I ask some follow-up questions to Banks?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, one of the things Banks said was like, from a data perspective, which I think is key. Like, if you go back and you look at, or you do on whatever time frame you're looking at, like an analysis of what does the low look like on a 1 hour, there is some, you know, sort of like whatever Jay would call it, like equals MC squared, like experience to, like, that just doesn't look like the low. And then there's some stuff with, you know, like intraday trend. Like, so today we were no tick below or no tick above the OR 32nd. The 15-minute opening range, which I use to define trend days, was also bearish posturing. So, you know, they, you know, the same way they didn't break the 32nd, they didn't break the 15-minute. And, you know, typically those classic trend days tend to close on the lows, or the lows tend to be weak. So there's some like data type things that you can do, you know, where it's like, what is the probability? I actually got absolutely burned on Thursday with the same thing, because they, you know, Macro and I've kind of been calling it like this Willy Wonka move, but everything was trend day, classic trend day on Thursday, classic trend day. They hit that, the trap sellers at 219, and I scaled into 219 and left runners because we should make a new low. We should close on the lows because of all of the sort of statistics or data I have around sort of not retesting mid or RTH mid, not retesting RTH VWAP, you know, again, like opening range, 15 minute opening range, all of these things were giving you context clues that we should close on the low of the day. So I held runners, and then they squeezed those runners like within, I think, like, you know, and it was like one of those things where if I just let them be BE, they probably wouldn't have gotten stopped out, but, you know, it was, whatever. I had already taken like 110 points back on pullback, and I puked them, and then it dropped and made the low of the day, went to my original target, which was like 167, which was a key level today as well. It was like the OR high.
Yep. I feel like we're getting a sneak peek of your good, bad, and ugly here.
Oh, dude, it was so brutal. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, but those things, like, those are trades that you have to lean into, because like Banks was saying, like, from a data perspective, like, you know, statistically that we end up closing on the lows on days that have this profile, that days that have these characteristics. You know, some of them a little harder to define from a data perspective. Some, again, like, are more like that E equals MC squared experience piece, but do you bet the entire farm on it? I typically don't, but I usually try to like leave some portion of the bet in for those kind of things. Thursday didn't work out that way. Today, you know, did, where we kind of pushed down and made a new low and all of those things, where it was like, actually it wasn't even that much easier because we bid off that daily gained level and Q. Mm-hmm. But when they did it, they couldn't break OR high. And I was telling the guys today, yeah, I was like, this is bad. Like, I bought calls on the lows. I was long from 42-ish area or whatever the daily gain level was. And
for Trade Brothers.
There you go. But when it like, and but we get to the opening range, and then the expected behavior would be, okay, we need to break OR high. We should go for an equidistant move, which like put us roughly back up to this guy that has been like just firing clips at like 285 overnight high, I think was like 3-something. And we couldn't get above even the opening range. It stayed a no-tick OR. And so again, you know, there's these characteristics, I think, that are a part of like, is this a good low or is it a not a good low, that I think are key amongst a handful of other things. But there's some order flow stuff, too, I think, that if you're not tracking, it's hard to see on a bar chart, like whether or not a low is sort of like what I would call secure, or if buyers or sellers did a good job staying on sides into a high or a low, which I think is like a huge piece of order flow or a huge benefit of order flow versus just price action, which I love. I predominantly trade price action, but if sellers get absolutely pummeled into a low, the odds that that low goes, at least on the first half, are just not very good. But if we make a low and it wicks out of there and sellers do a pretty good job, which they did today, of not getting trapped, and you know, you don't see anomalous delta into the lows, you don't see anomalous buyers into the highs, typically, yeah, they can come back and sweep those. But if those guys get like cucked down there, I mean, it's pretty tough. like, and also from an order flow perspective, like the laddering too. So like when you see a really good low from an order flow perspective versus like just pure price or pure, you know, experience or just like whatever the narrative of the day, when you see a good low get put in, they absolutely just bend shorts over. There's a bunch of people trying to push either a key area or whatever's going on down at the lows. You get several hundred lots in NQ stuck at the lows, anomalous delta, whatever you want to call it. Like there's people just getting absolutely cocked at the lows from the sell side. When it pushes up, you still see that behavior. So there's more on every sort of pullback that's trying to get back to there. Yeah. You see more sellers getting stuck and you get to see this layer cake that builds of that like despair, right? Of like, shit,
okay,
like this low, whether we tried to break, we tried too hard. They emptied the clip, right? And you know, I mean, you saw it at the highs yesterday at like 285, 310. And so like today specifically, I don't think we saw that, right? Like the sellers did a relatively good job into the lows of staying on sides and they didn't get fucked on that run up and it bounced 110 points.
Yeah.
And they did a fairly good job.
Bounced hard and fast, but yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of offsides coming in trying to refade that now that you mentioned that. So it sounds like it's less about like what happens immediately, but more what happens going into it and what happens coming out of it that kind of informs your decisions or your thought process. Did I have that right?
Yeah. I mean, I would say the actual low number amount, I mean, unless you have something that's just to the tick, like a key level or something like that, I would say
like pro shot with his options.
Yeah. I mean, it's more important, I think. I don't know, that 10 to 20 points of coming into it and that 10 to 20 points of going out of it. Cause you know, like at those lows, I mean, if we would have got a hard wick out and seller stepped up and made another attempt at it, you know, then you have like another leg into that move. Now, if you get two pushes into those lows where you just have a bunch of people that are just off sides, that tends to be one of those, like once you get back above that, everyone just lets go of that position. And then you get that, you know, that kind of, I guess that rocket fuel is what you want to call it to the upside.
So what are some other things that, I mean, one of the things you guys mentioned there was trap traders. I kind of want to talk a little bit about that because I had a feeling it was going to come up. Like seeing trap traders at a low is a good sign that the bounce from that could be a little more prolific, I guess, than if there weren't there, which makes sense because you got a bunch of people who have to go cover their positions. And if it starts pulling away from them, they're going to start panicking and just fuel themselves. But like, what does that look like to you guys? And I think sometimes we get kind of like stuck on ourselves. Like we see it happening in the moment and we think, oh, stuck traders, but they're not stuck yet. Like they have to get stuck first. You can see them coming in, but until they actually price moves away from them and they start exiting, they're not trapped. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, like the concept of trap traders is it's a pattern, right? Like it's a pattern of delta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what you don't want to see into a low is, you know, however you build your footprint, but like, you know, you don't want to see five blocks of 150 plus negative delta into the low, because if they push away from that area, it's bad, right? Like it's just bad from a patterns perspective. Now, as they're lingering around that area, yeah, sure. Like you're like, but it's always that uneasy moment. Like when we're pushing like a major low and you see the boy step in, like you're cheering for this dude who's firing 200 lots into the lows because you're short, right? And you want him to be right and have the momentum to push it in. But as soon as they get above him and they can't go back, like on the low example, I mean, they had, it's funny because they had like 400 or so that were like pushing into the lows, the candle before the low, and they pushed down and then the guy only sold like 73. It was like minus 73 delta into the lows. That's pretty clean. But if they would have pushed down and then they push up and they can't go bid like whatever the low was today before that, like 36 or whatever, 35, if they can't go bid 035, it's a fucking problem. Like that guy is going to get scooped, because what it does is it shows vulnerability. So people who are watching order flow or whatever, you know, if it's algos, who fucking knows? The pattern is the pattern. When they get vulnerable, that's when they get squeezed, and that's when you see them step in. And, you know, I mean, honestly, probably from just like the perspective of the people who are pushing those lows, like you fire off a ton of bullets and then it doesn't go. It doesn't trigger other traders to jump in and follow you into this trade lower or to push the low. you know, I mean, are you going to be the first one out the door? Or are you going to let everybody else who tried to follow you, you know, hold the bag? Like, you're probably going to let them hold the bag. And and that kind of causes that sort of, you know, reverse, you know, behavior. But the main thing is a clean, clean low will have sellers that are smart. If you see a bunch of smart sellers into a low that are sort of like offloading positions into an area of high risk where you should be de-risking, they're likely to then have bullets to fire when we pull back up and then help us push it back down through. And when we approach that low again, or that high or whatever on the opposite side of the example, you know, now they've got all those bullets they saved from not getting cucked into the lows last time. Let's you know, now let's punish these guys who bought. And, you know, I mean, the interesting dynamic there too is that, like, there's a bunch of buyers that were, you know, in good positions, right? And there's there's not sellers in bad positions, right? Sellers did a good job protecting themselves into the lows. There's buyers that are coming back to their entry, right? And you get this sort of like dynamic from an order flow perspective or a liquidity perspective that's just smoother for breaking the lows. And again, you know, the why of the market is just never going to be a thing unless you're, you know, whatever, on some different level or have some other stuff going on. It's about patterns and pattern recognition, in my opinion. And there's just certain patterns that you see when lows are made from an order flow perspective that will beget, you know, less friction or, you know, whatever. Like, I call it a roadblock, like it's just a pain in the ass when you come back in. And I think that should, in some effect, you know, weigh into your decision-making process, whether you're adding to shorts, you know, after a low gets, you know, absolutely smoked and there's a bunch of guys that get sort of, you know, cucked into the lows. You know, I mean, there's things that you should do actually on that pullback that actually matter as well, too. So,
right, right. A couple of things popping up here in the chat. Jeff saying clean low should have excess. I think that's
which is point. Basically another way of saying the sellers did a good job of not getting screwed into a low. Yeah.
Purdue's, I think, I don't know if he's asking what time frame for question of clean lows. Do you guys look at different time frames to try to identify those? Or
I mean, it's fractal in nature. I mean, it's going to move from the smallest time frame to the biggest time frame. So it all depends on what you're really looking at. I mean, you know, if you're trading off of a 5-minute chart or a 1-minute chart, I mean, when you see a low get set up on a 30-second chart, I mean, yeah, you have an idea of something that might be changing, but I wouldn't base a trade off of a smaller time frame on that aspect of it. But the delta aspect is kind of an interesting piece, because delta into like a low, like even strong delta into a low, like of negative delta, the thing about it is you don't really know what that is or who's firing.
Right.
You know, so like a lot of those times, like it's kind of more of just, it's not a guessing game. You have an educated guess of what could be happening. But, you know, one thing I would say is this week, we kind of made a mention in the chat, but just the overall like contract roll, I mean, you're going to see just bigger lots being fired. So like even this week, it was harder to lean on 300 lots getting fired, because that's just going to happen on contract roll week. So that is tough, kind of if you're gauging a trade off of just pure delta.
I mean, you mentioned that, I think, right after I took a trade on one of those. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess I better trail this stop pretty tight.
Yeah, I think we're mainly talking like intraday lows right now, you know, which is where order flow and things like that, you know, sort of like matter. But for the higher time frame stuff, like 1 hour, or for me at least, 1 hour, 4 hour daily, there's similar patterns, but I would say order flow matters much less and price action probably matters more. And on that higher time frame, you know, 1 hour, 4 hour daily, for me, I want to see a significant move into a higher low. Like, I don't want to see like a grindy, like, I don't want to see balance break, trap, and pull back, and that be the low, because that low is bullshit. Like, I want to see a strong low, what I would call like a move versus a leg into a low.
Yeah.
I want to see a move into a low. And then when a low gets made, for me, like, I call it the move to the low or the move to the high. Right. So of the trend, right, this is the new current high or the new current low. When that low gets made of the new current trend, I don't care if it's a low like rel, you know, whatever, that came to the left, like it has to be the new lowest low of the entire trend. if that gets made on like sort of like a small leg versus a large move, it's not as strong. If it gets made on a one bar, like a one bar hourly low, so like the way that you would make that would be like an outside bar, right? So we come in, we make a high, and we make a new low on the 1 hour, and then it rips out of there. That would be a one bar low or a one bar high. One bar lows and one bar highs are super fucking weak. Like they come back and get tested. Was it Jimmy Jew talks about like lows or highs with massive wicks, which you'll see a lot like in FOMC, things like that. You know, if it trades there, it trades there, I think is like his saying. You know, so again, like that sort of like one bar low, that like huge wick lows, there's some like characteristics from the higher time frame from a price action perspective that I think really sort of dictate whether or not a low is strong or if it's the start of a trend. Because when we start to shift from intraday to like the 1 hour, 4 hour daily, what we're talking about is like, at least in my opinion, the pure move to the low or the pure move to the high. And what that really is saying in another way is trend shifting, right? So the 1 hour trend has yep. made a low and it is now shifting up. And so this is not like some arbitrary intraday low. Are we going to trade another 20 points lower? This is, did we just change the 1 hour trend? And now we're talking about, you know, days, hours, you know, sessions, whatever it is, weeks, that we're potentially now starting a trend in the other direction. So there's some much bigger characteristics at play, such as one, you know, what does the low look like from a price action perspective? How strong was the move into the low? How far did it come from the move to the high? And I also think more importantly is what I call activation, right? So not only do we need to like sort of push the low, we need to get above the high that came before that one to really confirm it. You know, there's some a handful of other like sort of like nuanced rules that I look at. But like generally, when we make a low, not only should we confirm above the high, the swing high that made the low, but we should confirm above the other one, right? And if we just like kind of barely confirm and then start some more balance, like that's kind of a weak bullshit confirmation of that low. But if you go look at like some of these dailies, like what was the daily? Was it like October or something like that on the daily? Hold on a second. Sorry.
Oh, is that the image you shared with us in the?
Yeah, it was in October. So we made the move to the low from, I'm looking at ES. No, I'm looking at NQ. 15409. To 14601. So we made basically a 800 move down to the low, and then we confirmed it. And the move that we confirmed it on was literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 bullish days in a row. And it was like basically a 1500 point move to confirm the move to the low. So we confirmed the shift in trend on a 1500 point move. So it sounds kind of like bullshit to say like, oh, the low gets confirmed with a strong move above it. Well, yeah, obviously, but not in, at least like if you have a rule set for confirming what a move to the low or move to the high looks like, they're not all sort of like created equally, right? Like you can just barely get above the level that sort of like shifts trend and then it kind of lingers around and it doesn't really like solidly confirm, or you can just like blow the bricks off the thing and push up 1500 points. And yeah, okay. Like you could say, oh, sweet. We moved 1500 points from the lows. Like, yeah, solid confirmation. Well, that move ended at 15,800 and we traded 3000 points higher than that. So,
right.
You know, there is, depending on your time frame, what looks like sort of a solid move, I would call to the low or the high, like versus like a passive or a weak move. Or a leg to the low, a leg to the high. And then that confirmation also being like solid with follow through, which I think like is a huge talking point for next week, especially on NQ. So the 1 hour and the 4 hour trend has been shifting a ton. The daily trend just got lost with confirmation below 18,083. And we have three red days in a row, but we literally closed at like 18,063. So only 20 points below the confirmation. So daily trend has shifted, but only by 20 points. So the last time this happened, sellers did the same thing and they instantly had it run right back up their fucking backside. And we went, you know, whatever. We went 2,000 points up from like 16.4 right. to like 18.4. Yeah. So this next week is really important for the sellers because they need to confirm. They still have these like three red days from the last swing high, which the last swing high was like 18, like 5. 15 or whatever to round.
Right.
If we continue this sequence of red days and we get another strong, like, you know, thousand point move, like down to say like 17.5 or something like that, that's going to be a strong confirmation of this daily trend shift. The daily move to the high is a strong confirmation. And I think that makes a big difference on to whether or not we, you know, fake break down from this consolidation and then rip to like 21K or something like that. Because as silly as it sounds, like the next, you know, 1,000 points matters for the next 3,000 points.
Yeah.
And that matters for the 4 hour, the 1 hour trend. And, you know, these sort of intraday patterns that we just, you know, we're talking about from an order flow perspective or just like whatever, a lower time frame price perspective. So I'm off my whatever cool tech soapbox.
I don't want to stop you.
I know. That's I was staying quiet for it.
Everybody get notes. Do you mind if I share that image in the description here so people can see what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts or maybe how about some ideas that people can take to kind of go and do some homework and kind of study? Like what things should they go back and look at to try to like build what a good low looks like for them?
Focus on the right lows. The true move to the high and the true move to the low. Mm-hmm. And defining what that looks like to you. You know, again, the Cool Tech blog from a whatever gain loss perspective has some really cool rules around defining it. Did some work in the Avvo room or whatever we did as well, like around my rules for that. But like, if you understand what is the true moment where trend shifts on the time frame that you're watching, which I would call the move to the high or the move to the low, you now understand where trend shifts. And there's like probably nothing more powerful, in my opinion, from a trend price action perspective.
Love that. Banks, anything you want to add?
No, I would second that. I learned all that from Flurry myself, so I would second that, and it's a huge help. Yeah, it's a huge help.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. All right. Well, looks like we do have a little bit of time left, so I guess we can go on to our other topic here. This was one that Purdue suggested. He just kind of wants to hear about like what our morning routines look like. So I'm going to exercise creative interpretation and say that that is from the moment you wake up to the moment you're ready to execute a trade. Like what are the things that you do the same every day?
Just lift your head off the pillow and start clicking buttons, right?
Some of us have done that before. It doesn't work too well.
No, I mean, I think it's good on my standpoint because, you know, I go to the office every day. So I kind of get that 30 to 40 minutes of kind of, you know, I'll look at it at my house before I go and kind of see where we're at. And then I'll have that 30 to 40 minutes mm-hmm. of a drive to kind of just think about the overall day.
I thought you were going to say stare at charts.
No,
I've done that before.
Don't pretend like you don't drive and look at charts. Yeah. Come on.
No, you have to trade while you drive. That's the key.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was going to leave that part out.
You know, and then getting to the office is, you know, kind of, you know, getting that, you know, drink or whatever, sitting down and just starting, you know, looking at charts, you know, kind of go from the bigger time frames to the smaller time frames, see where we're at, you know, see what my bias is for the day or kind of my plan for the day is. And then, you know, kind of getting on chat and then, you know, talking to the group about it. I mean, nothing really special about it, but.
Nothing like as far as like I want to make sure that I get 30 minutes of exercise, or I want to make sure that I spend some time journaling my thoughts or like writing out a plan of action for the day or like any of those types of things.
No, not necessarily. I mean, I'm not. It's not key on that. I mean, I kind of go through it in the talk anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't really write anything down. I know Baba writes a lot of stuff down. I know a lot of people journal and kind of write their plan. Flurry, for instance.
Yep.
But I don't know. I kind of remember at least what I look at. So I tend not to have to go back and, I don't know, look at the paper. But
is he calling us old?
Not at all. First. Not at all.
Write it down, then ignore it. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Baba.
Speaking
that's
truth.
What it feels like I do.
Speaking truth.
Flurry, what about you, man?
I mean, as far as like non-trading charting patterns or whatever, repetitive stuff, I wish I could say that I don't have so many kids that I can have a consistent morning, but I try to, if there's like data events and stuff like that, you know, schedule sort of getting everybody off and on the bus and to school and all that good stuff in an orderly fashion. And if I can't because they're going nuts or, you know, whatever, I had one too many whiskeys the night before, whatever the you know, whatever it is, I try to be sort of like aware of that so that I don't step in and try to like sling UB contracts at 7:20 in the morning. When I just walked in, you know, the garage door and like my desk is like right by the garage for dropping the kids off. And I like, you know, I just haven't gone through the whole sort of routine. So I would say like that's probably the main thing. You know, I don't like do an ice plunge and, you know, jog 5 miles in the morning. But
right.
I do try to like I do try to wake up early. I always do my work before I go to bed. Or at least like late at night, like I'm always grinding charts. I'm very rarely surprised by what I see when I come to the charts in the morning. It's more of an update to the work that I had already done, post-market. And that work is all 100% either, automated and, or like in a process. So like, I only look at the same sort of like 8 things every day. I have a chart book that looks at exactly those things. I go through them. I see if any of my A+ setups are within sort of like a 5-day ATR of the open or the projected open, and draw my levels of areas of interest. So like, where would I really want to do business, which is basically like this, you know, like where are my areas of interest, and do I think they're bid or offer or MOMO type levels, right? So like, if I'm trying to short above this level, like it better be like very price risk oriented. Like I'm not going to sort of recycle or build a trade in this area above a certain level, and just sort of like build my daily plan based upon that, and then try to watch how the rotations build on the open. But as far as like a morning prep goes, like it's very systematic. Like I basically take my playbook and say, okay, are there any A+ setups or any plays from my playbook that are, you know, sort of like dependent on like previous price action or yesterday's session, whatever? And are they here and are they within reach? Right. Cause sometimes we'll have a Leroy, but it's, you know, 200 points above the open or whatever.
Right.
That's probably extreme, but you get it, right? Yeah. Like it's like maybe a B setup or something like that. And it's really just about going through all of those things and saying, are there playbook plays today that will set up? And if some days the answer is yes, there clearly are. And some days it's a mix, right? And other days there's not really like, there's just nothing, right? Like, and you have to go to your sort of intraday setups, which would be trading the opening range, trading rotations, rotation reversals, watching to see if the opening range is a no tick, if a trend day develops on, say, the 15 or 30 minute, trading, you know, initial balance ranges, whatever it is that you do, you know, volume profiling, TPOing, stuff like that, like where you're basically just pure intraday because none of your setups from a higher time frame are even within reach, right? And I think that's the biggest thing is like it without the playbook, and we talked about this last week too, like without the playbook,
right?
You know, I mean, you don't really have much to lean on except for you're coming in every morning and trying to like pick levels, which I think is fine. But it's, you know, for me, it's very system, like here's the 7 charts I look at. Are my setups within range today? And how do I rank those setups? And, you know, in those, where are they? And usually they'll give me, you know, I like, again, try to look at like a 5-day ATR. Like what's the 5-day ATR? And 265 points in NQ. Mm-hmm. So like, where are we rel to open, right? Okay, we're going to open somewhere around like 160 or 150 or whatever. Okay, so look 250 points up, look 250 points down. Do you have any of your playbook plays that line up there and down here, and write them down or whatever you do, or just, you know, have them automated, put them on your charts, however you do it. And then the rest is really just like your experience, right? Like intraday experience of watching the order flow come in or the rotations build and what kind of day type sort of develops. So
it's funny. I was expecting to hear more like stuff for like the mental side of it, but it sounds like really you just boiled it down to such a systematic type approach that there's really no room for that emotional side to really kind of work its way in there. Like it has to try really hard to try to override something that's that systematic in place.
I think that that dictates size though. I mean, I don't know about you, Banks, but yeah. Like if I'm having a shitty morning, and dude, trust me, it happens all the time. Or if I had a rough day the day before, or I mean, dude, honestly, like fighting with your wife, whatever it is, like the kids just driving you bonkers on the way to school or you're running behind, whatever. There's some things like sometimes I'll just let the market kind of churn a little bit. Right. And, you know, catch intraday trades versus, you know, bigger, you know, positional type ideas, or size down, like huge size down, huge, because you're just not like mentally there. But I do, you know, I'm a firm believer just sort of like stepping up and swinging the bat. You should be in there, like following your process and not letting things, you know, just like go to the wayside. But yeah, I mean, if you're not mentally in the right place,
I just pick up a bat and start swinging.
I mean, yeah, you can. You can. And sometimes it works, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think like the mental game or like the emotional sort of like metric or barometer, whatever you're taking your emotional temperature in the morning is more a gauge of size. If you don't have an outlined process or like you don't know exactly where you want to do business before the market opens, you might as well just like scalp or trade intraday rotations because that's very systematic, right? Yeah. Like, you know, they trap somebody here, sellers got screwed, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, like all of whatever you do, you might as well just do that stuff because like your bigger plans are basically shot if you don't already have a process to sort of figure those out. And even worse, like if you're not ready before the market opens, if you're still right. Trying to look for levels and it's like 8:35, I'm central time. So whatever, it's 5 minutes after the market opens, like you're in trouble, right? Yeah. Like, so just, you need to have like this done, you know, whatever, 7:30, 8:30, you know, in the morning at the very least, you know, ready to roll. And I think that's probably a mistake that a lot of us make, and myself included. Like there's some days where I don't get to this part, because I'm that far behind and I have a lot of it automated on my charts where like, yeah, I can, there's a handful of my A+ setups that are relatively automated where I know where the levels are, but like that doesn't mean that I haven't taken the time to grab a pen and mentally think through whether or not like I want to fight for this level. What about like when we get to that level, did we break through some other levels that in my opinion are like momentum gauge levels? And that like when you haven't thought through all of those things and really sort of like designed the trade before the trade comes to you, you can find yourself kind of, you know, in a tough spot in what is an A+ setup, but you're not prepared for sort of like all of the E=MC² of when price comes to that level. You know, what sort of things like did we go through, did happen before?
So I'm writing this down, Flurry, because I think we're going to have to come back to this one. Defining the trade before it happens. I think that's an excellent topic for another one of these discussions.
Yeah, I think that's key. You know, I mean, there's a lot of times in the past that I've said, like, you know, it all depends on sequence of events. So, like,
yeah,
if you have an A+ setup and it goes one way and you're coming in late and you see it kind of coming to your level, if you kind of don't have that planned out in your head of, hey, it took this key level above us, do I really want to be long in here? Do I really want to fire some bullets here? But, yeah, just kind of, you know, kind of walking through, like, you know, just like an absolute playbook of like, you know, if it goes here, I want to see it here. If we come here first, I want to see it go and, you know, take this level or, you know, that trade that you base it off of. And it's so hard. Cause like, I mean, like Flurry said, I mean, any small thing mentally can take a toll on you in trading.
Yep.
Coming in late from work, having a meeting, you know, family issues or whatever. And that's one thing about trading is you have to be self-aware of your ability in that moment. And I think that's something that a lot of people overlook when they first get into it.
Yep. Man, good discussions on this one. I think it's about time. Maybe we move on and do some good, bad, and ugly, and then maybe wrap this thing up. What do you guys say?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, let's do that. So Good, Bad, and Ugly is where we talk about the goods, the bads, and the uglies of our past week. I can leave this open to whoever wants to kick us off and talk about a good, a bad, ugly, or all three. Up to you guys how much you want to share.
I'm down for whatever. Banks, you want me to go or you want to go?
You can go.
All right. Let's see. We'll do good first. I did bad last week. I would say good, just like this week was a really good process week as far as like just the modes of work that I look at really resulted in sort of like the expectation. So it was like, you know, just kind of a good week to like whatever it is, like self-confirmation or confirmation of the work or whatever you want to call it, like just like building trust in the system of sort of going through the steps of like, here's where I want to do business and it's working and, you know, following trend and all of these things that I was doing. So like there were some really good trades that were, I would call them like relatively like counter the macro sentiment or whatever the bullshit is that like, you know, everyone thinks.
Counter macro tactical. I wouldn't dare.
Counter macro tactical. But that were hard to take. I actually faded one of my A plus setups this week, Thursday, on the Leroy. It was a Leroy up, but it was just not like they had shifted the trend. They lost the overnight trend, which is a huge like tell when they push and then lose a high and overnight. And I was just like, normally I would get long through sort of this level, the Leroy up level that was just above the open, and it actually pushed up. I shorted it. And I maybe traded like 10 or 15 points above it. And it was the high of the day. And again, like that comes back to that like preparation piece, because if you just come in and you go, oh, it's a Leroy up, I'm just going to get gig along. Fuck it. I don't care. It's my A plus setup. And you don't know all these other things that happen because you're not aware of or didn't do the homework on the charts. You just looked at your setup and you're like, oh, there it is. I'm getting long. You would have gotten absolutely run over and it would have been fine, right? In the world of stats of like, oh, it's just another failed Leroy. Mm-hmm. You know, statistically that's fine if I lose on this trade, and it is, but it was a good week from that, like sort of like really just sort of like paying attention and like your, whatever the work sort of like driving sort of the execution for the week. So I would say that was the good.
It sounds like you just read the charts well.
The read.
Yeah. Like you just had a good read of what was going. Yeah.
The read was on this week. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The read was on this week. That's a good way to sort of like sum up the good. The read was on this week. I would say the bad was probably just like some trade management this week. Had a couple of trades that one could have went significantly further, which is always tough when you're sort of like in a range. Mm-hmm. To like decide whether or not like this is going to be the move that's going to trade the range. And that's just like, I don't know. That's a tough trade, right? Yeah. Like the sort of like range is capped to some extent, and then we start breaking through some of those things and we start doing those like those bigger moves. And this week was like Willy Wonka to the max, right? So like we had what 200 points down, 400 points up. We had like long, short, long, super short, like long. It was just like all over the place this week. So there was a couple of trades where one runners went back to BE. Or like they would have gone significantly further kind of thing, or like the good enough was like too good kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I would say that was sort of like the bad is like there was like probably not enough meat taken off the bone, given sort of like the general sort of rotations that we had on the higher time frame. And I would say the bad or the ugly was also yesterday. Covered a significant piece into 219, and man, this thing ran back to 285, and there was a big player. I was tweeting about it, like guy was emptying the clip at 285, and they swept it up to like 310 a few times, but I had told myself, like, listen, all the trend day stuff was there. Mm-hmm. Like it was all there. We hadn't tested RTH mid, we hadn't reclaimed RTH VWAP. And we pushed back up and they kind of got above the 285 guy. The 285 guy stepped back in from the bid side. And I was like, man, I really don't like that this guy is still here after all of this pain that, you know, whatever his trades likely took or whatever. Like, I don't like that he's still bidding this area. And they pushed it up to like three something. And I puked and I was short from the opening range. So I puked before the opening range even hit. And I think it maybe went 5 points higher. And the idea is I'm holding these runners and I was married to them. As Baba would say, I hitched my wagon to them. I hitched my wagon to them because of, like we talked about, that low should not have been the low of day. Historically, when you look back at the stats of like a trend day, historical or like a whatever, a pattern trend day, the low gets made in the last hour of the day. And here we are, you know, 2 hours before that, and we're at 285, pushing 300. And, you know, I just went, like, I don't want, I'm just going to cut these things. And literally 5 points later, it pushes up, snaps back down. And there was a ton of size up at like 300, 305 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And they just dropped it. And they went all the way down to the 167, which was my target. And yeah, I mean, that was just like one of those like painful market, you know, has just like this fancy way of like max painting you.
Kicking you in the nuts.
Yeah. And, you know, so whatever. Ugly just for more like it just hurt perspective, yeah. Not necessarily like process, but like it's just like, oh, really, dude, really?
I think it's important to kind of make like keep in mind that in mind, too. Like process wise, I wouldn't call that an ugly. It sounded like you were following all of that. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it hurts. It sucks. But in the grand scheme of things, like I'd say you did the right thing or you were doing the right things. If you want to speak about a real ugly, though, I can go and share mine here.
Hey, go for it.
All right. Well, I guess I'll just go ahead and let's see. How do I want to do this? Let's start with the bad. So Wednesday, I stopped myself before violating one of my drawdown rules, which is now set at $400 max loss in any of those Top Step X accounts that I'm trading. I'd gotten close to that, and I think I maybe had like a dollar or two to spare, and I was starting to load up a mini chart, and I was just going to start YOLOing, and like I felt myself in that moment ready to do it, and I actually stopped myself. And what was interesting about that entire experience was that it was actually, as hard as it was to stop myself at first moment, it was significantly easier when that thought kept repeating, like, oh, flip to the mini. It's like, no, not doing that. Once I'd made the decision, like it was done, and it wasn't that hard to like stay disciplined anymore after that. So that's something that was really interesting. I made note of. I was bad because I got close to it, but it was good that I didn't let it actually happen. Now the ugly is all those trades that I made on Wednesday, all of the good ones turned out I was actually on SIM on the account that I was trading with that. So
oh geez,
all of the gains completely out the window. It didn't happen. All the losses were real. So yay. That's an ugly.
Bro, are you not coloring DOMs for Sim yet?
Yo, it's very, very pink. And it was actually, that was what clued me in when I was sitting in a runner with, that was, I think it was at 80 points. And I'm like, oh, are you fucking kidding me? And I just closed it up and walked away at that point. I was like, we're not trading anymore today.
Oh, is that when you walked away, like mid-morning?
No, that was after the fact.
Okay.
No, I took a break, to reset after catching myself with that. And then when I came back, yeah, everything was done in Sim after that, apparently. Banks, what do you got, man? Hopefully something better.
Yeah, I'll go, I'm in a similar boat. Thursday was a little bit tougher, to trade. And it wasn't that I, you know, we didn't make money. It was very hard to get positioned for that move down. I just felt like the overall range of that area was, they made it very difficult to get positioned. Mm-hmm. And the normal range, like what we were talking about, I think I messaged Flurry about this on just the average rotation size. Like we weren't even getting like average rotation size on some of these moves. So, you know, probably had like four or five come back break even on me that day. Mm. And then going into the afternoon, I was like, I'm just done. You know, I'm just going to get out of here. But, you know, it's just, you know, I was up, if you combine them all, probably a couple hundred points, you know, over all those trades and just let them all come back to break even on those moves. But like Flurry said, the stats on it, you know, if you look back at your work, that trade should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you have it should have gone three or four times, and it's it gets a little frustrating on you. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with a good. Today, I was kind of in and out and had meetings and stuff like that all morning. So, kind of went with a Flurry route. I got into an A-plus setup in two micros.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was not on the chart. So, you know, normally I would not be trading that kind of size, but especially being a Friday and kind of being, you know, mobile on the go, kind of talked myself out of doing the mini trade. I wish I would have done the mini trade, but it is what it is. But
oh man, that sucks. But I mean, that's the right choice too.
It's the right call though. It's the right call.
I mean, you're running around doing a closing. Like you don't need to be slinging minis around, and you can't really dedicate the full bandwidth.
I would tell my customer to hold on a second.
Love that. All right, guys. Let's see. Let's figure out what we're gonna do here for bold predictions. Kind of like what Baba was suggesting in the chat there. Why don't we just turn this one into like a full-on let everybody participate? I'll create an ESPN league, and anybody who wants to create a bracket, and we'll all try to pick the best March Madness bracket.
I got a ringer I'm going to call in to make my picks. I have no idea.
Is it? It's not Booch, is it?
No, it's not Booch.
Booch is my ringer.
Booch is the Booch is like the sports betting fade, isn't he? I mean, I love Booch, but like he's pure degenerate. I'm sorry, Booch.
Just because he's betting on UK like dart leagues and Indian lacrosse teams, like that doesn't mean he doesn't know what he's doing. I don't know. What do you guys say? Should we do that?
I'm down.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. The brackets don't come out until Sunday, right?
Yeah, Sunday.
Yeah, I think you're right. As soon as they come out, I will. I'll create a league. Yes, exactly. Yeah, once they come out, I'll create a league and then I'll put out an invite. I'll make sure I update this episode with that. It comes out on Sunday anyway, so hopefully it's out by that time. But I think we did it. I think we made an episode here, boys.
Let's go. How we do on time? I feel like every time I talk too much. So
no, we nailed it. It was actually perfect. That's actually exactly what I was hoping for.
We gotta keep the editing team happy.
I know, right? Which is mostly Laura because she wakes up earlier.
I know. I was gonna say your wife, but I wanted to give you a little
leash. Yeah. All right, folks, that's going to do it for today's episode. I'd like to say thank you to Banks and Flary for joining me this fine evening and all the people in the chat. Looks like we had a pretty good house joining us today for sticking up. Oh, God damn it. Don't go off script, boys. That's what happens.
Edit.
And everyone listening for sticking around to the end, please show our panelists some love. Check out their links in the show notes. And remember to check out the combined Discord where you can trade with Purdue and I live every Friday morning on the free side. Sometimes Bob and Banks stop by. you can listen in live to these recordings. You can even participate in a random Ask Me Anything with Flary when he shows up early for a poker tournament. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully as impressive as a perfect 2024 prediction record. But until that day, pat that 5-star rating like it's a real market guru and have a great week.
All right, guys.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.